Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are figuring it out as they make their way through life, love, limberness. Yeah, I went to yoga again today. So, you know, yeah. Are you feeling limber? How are you feeling, Dwight?
I'm feeling good. I went to the gym today. I've been pretty diligent about that.
Okay, that's good.
I'm not a class guy. I don't like the instructor. I would put my headphones on and I got like the big Beats, the don't fuck with me, do not disturb headphones. And that's how I like to, I like to namaste.
The instructors don't like that. They don't like it when you have your headphones on during the class.
Just blaring NWA.
Yeah, so loud that everyone else can still hear it too.
Yeah.
Well, I went to yoga again for, this is my second class. I went last Tuesday, I went this Tuesday. And as soon as I walked in, the instructor was like, you know, and I was kind of late. I was running late today. And so I was one of the last people getting in there. Everybody else was pretty much set up. And the instructor's like, in case anybody is wondering, this warm-up music today is Jack Johnson. And I almost left. I almost just...
That's not warm-up, but...
For yoga it is, because it's, you're supposed to be warming up for yoga. Is supposed to be like, you're supposed to chill out and think about your breathing and all that kind of stuff. So
Oh yeah, that makes sense. You're not she's not putting on Lil Jon's greatest hits.
No. There's no, like, there's, we have very different workout regimens, you and I think, but
that's why it comes together.
I didn't leave though. The class is good. She's very nice. I hate to like kind of make fun of her 2 weeks in a row. She's very nice. But you know, she's a yoga teacher. She got yoga teacher tendencies.
I feel like if you're teaching a yoga class, you have to go with something palatable for everyone.
Exactly. Yeah.
So Jack Johnson is like, he'd be like top 10 in that realm of, I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm not trying to piss anybody off.
Exactly. Yeah. It is the very definition of easy listening. So
yeah. I dig that, man. I work out a little later in the day and I came back there. We're getting new roads. So,
oh, good.
On our street. Yeah, good. You've been to my house. You know, it's a pothole city.
Yep.
Pothole's big enough to take you to Mordor. So, 4 years later, after they probably should have, they're finally doing that. But it means we have to park so far away. I have to park around the block and I just forgot. So, we're starting a little late today, but
it's all right.
We're good. I'm still sweating on Zoom, so I got the shine.
You're fresh from the gym. You just came back from the gym.
I just came back from the gym, hopped in the shower, but the sweating has not subsided and probably won't until June.
Yeah. that's a heck of a workout you did, I guess. Yeah. You got that 2 month workout in there. It's keep you sweating. All right. That's good.
I mean, you listen to DMX for a reason.
That's true. Yeah. I did not know this, and I'm sure that you already know this, but someone told me this over the weekend that I guess there's footage on YouTube. I should have looked it up after they told me, but I didn't. Of DMX's, after he passed away, his funeral procession through Brooklyn. Did you see it?
No.
Through the Bronx?
I'm sure I did, though.
It was a monster truck that had his casket in the back of it, and it was just blasting his music, driving all through the five boroughs.
Yeah.
And And I think I went the same thing when I go. When I went...
It's beautiful.
I want a monster truck with my casket blasting DMX. That's what I want.
Specifically DMX.
Yeah, because then people won't know what's going on. They'll think, did he die again? Did DMX die again? Why is it in Indiana and Kentucky? Why is...
the confusion is at all time. I will say you will need to... before you go, you will need to browse over that track list, because some of those songs are... super problematic. I don't think you want that.
They don't have
audio bits. No, not repeated on this podcast. That's the that's the Patreon version.
Yeah. Anyway, I do want to do one more thing about my yoga class, and then we'll move into comedy talk, or more hip hop talk if you want. I did have a weird thing happen though. Like all day today, I've been like weirdly lightheaded ever since, because I take the yoga classes at 6 a.m. It's super early, and it's not like it's intense. You know, it's like a kind of a very beginners, you know, kind of thing. So I definitely didn't like hurt myself in any kind of way or whatever. But for whatever reason, ever since yoga, I have been strangely lightheaded. I don't know if this is what enlightenment feels like, or I maybe moved one of the vertebrae in my neck somehow that it is now choking off oxygen to my brain. But it's weird, like to the point that if I jumped up really quick, I would probably fall over. Honestly, like that's how lightheaded I've been all day.
You're lightheaded now?
I'm lightheaded right now too. Oh, wow. Yeah. And I thought, well, maybe it's blood sugar or whatever. So then I ate, and then that didn't really fix it. And then I had a little bit of coffee with like just a tiny bit of caffeine in it. That didn't fix it. I took a nap. I was like, all right, maybe I'm just still just like wiped out from like the last, you know, couple of weeks of shows and stuff. Took a nap. That didn't fix it. Like I've been able to like walk the dog and stuff and be active, but it's a weird, it's like, I feel weird. That's the whole thing.
Yeah. I studied this in college. It is the, it's the after effects of listening to Jack Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You got that Jack Johnson runner high.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
it'll subside. You'll get used to it by the sixth or seventh class.
Yeah. Okay.
You'll acclimate. Yeah. Don't fact check me, but I'm pretty sure.
Okay, now I believe you. I know you went to school for kinesiology, right?
Yep, kinesiology.
Is that how you pronounce? Is that how it's pronounced?
Yep, all three K's in there. You got it, kinesiology. Yeah, I did, and I have not used that degree once.
You used it at the gym, probably, didn't you?
Sure, it was worth the
proper
the
form
college debt.
Yeah,
yeah, proper.
When are you going to launch your personal training service? I mean, our buddy Jonas launched his own martial arts school. When are you going to be Dwight Simmons, trainer to the stars?
Probably after my next run of shows in Michigan. I'll probably throw in the towel. That'll be it. And then I'll launch my my version of Taibo.
Okay. Do you have a catchphrase ready for your version of Taibo?
Not yet. I'm going to get there by the end of the podcast.
Are you going to, well, instead of calling it Taibo, obviously, which is, you know, like obviously copyrighted, are you going to call yours Dwight Power?
I knew that was coming, and that's obviously the right choice.
I've been lobbying for you to use that as an album title for years, and you, for some reason, don't want to do it. I don't know why you
wouldn't want to do it. I could build a house with new paved roads if I just gave in to the right leaning. There are so many like black men comics that are just like conservative all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they make like I don't know $400,000 on the road every year.
Yeah, there's a whole. It's not just Candace Owens. There's an entire cottage industry of this.
Yep.
Do you want to be the black person behind Trump at the rally? Like.
I have a friend that does commercial acting that got offered to go to one of these rallies. So he's very ambiguous looking. Like you don't know.
I think I have this. I think I know who this is.
Yeah. And he got offered like a bunch of money, but he would have had to sign an NDA.
Yeah.
And he's like, this will be all I want to talk about on stage. Like.
Oh, I think we're talking about different people because I know someone who is a very handsome, you know, ambiguously possibly Latino looking man.
Yeah,
who got offered a commercial for Trump the first time Trump ran, and they were just like, I can't do it. Yeah. Like it was so much money, and they were just like, I can't. But that's even different because that like a rally, who's gonna really know? You know, like he was gonna be on a commercial that was gonna air like six times a day. You know.
Yeah, wow. But it's a screenshot, and we must not run in the same Facebook groups, but these people get outed very quickly.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's like, man, he's offering so much money for black street cred.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, all he's got to do is just realize he doesn't need the black street cred. He just needs that Jack Johnson body glow, and then he'll be fine.
Got the glow, baby.
And I can see Trump in his Bermuda shorts, toes in the sand, just chilling, listening to some Jack Johnson. And who's sitting on the beach next to him in that chair? It's Snoop Dogg, and they're doing a Corona commercial.
Of course they are.
You know, Snoop has finally said, you know, I haven't got my name on enough things yet, enough products for you to buy. Might as well go all in.
Yeah, yeah. Trump's obviously forgiven him for his fuck Trump. Statements for the last 4 years, the song he came out with.
Yeah. All right. So I feel like we've fulfilled our quality or like our quantity of hip hop talk and to complete bullshit that has nothing to do with comedy. But anyway, how are you doing, man? How was your week? What did you do?
My week was good. It was pretty chillaxed. I am going on the road, or just have a ton of shows in the next like 6 weeks. So it's nice to be home.
I saw your graphic. Yeah. You had that little flex graphic. You had that little, like, you know, you dropped that on social media solely as a way to flex on other comedians and let them know that they're not hashtag grinding enough.
You got to let these motherfuckers know, Matt, if I'm not going to be clipping up clips, you got to see what I'm doing with all my spare time, which is begging because for stage time. But yeah, I got a bunch of shows. I didn't realize it until I started putting that thing together, where I'm just going to be gone most weekends. And so this week I was able to stay at home. I did a, my wife and I went for a hike. That was really sweet. It was actually one of the nice days here in Indianapolis.
Was it really sweet? There was a little bit of a pause when you said that.
It was. I got the same thing you got. It's like the runner's high where you're good. Like, yeah, gotcha. I'm sweating outside. It's nice. But then on Wednesday, there was a going away show for Keith Evans. He's moving to L.A. He's been doing comedy here. That was at Hotel Tango. It was packed. Just did a little like 8-minute guest set. Played around with some new stuff. Did a bit to close the show, that just an old bit. And then I don't know, do you get this, like, if you pop in at a show, people want to put you last, you know what I mean?
Well, I don't pop into a lot of shows like that are like showcasing type shows. I people have asked me if I've wouldn't have gone up, and I'm usually, if I'm not planning on it, I usually decline, you know.
I did say no. He asked me when I walked in. I was like, no, I just came to support. And I said no. And then a couple of comics had a hot set, and I was like, I want to go up. Let me go. Let me live, baby. I couldn't turn it off.
Yeah. No, I think that's different. Yeah. I'm trying to think of last time, but yeah, generally speaking, I think people, if it's a mic, I think people often want to offer me the closing spot, which if it's like, it's happened when it's been out of town and stuff, or even if it's like a showcase thing where they like automatically schedule me there. And I'm like, I kind of honestly almost rather not go last, you know,
right.
Like, but yeah, I don't know. I don't get as asked to do that as much as you do, I think.
It's funny because like you have it's like, I don't do it as often as I probably should with like the availability of showcases here in Indianapolis where, but it's like, if it's a hot room, it's like, I want to go up next. You know what I mean?
Course,
it's like, I don't want to lose that energy and then go up and, oh, we got a special guest drop it in and then, you know, eat a dick.
Yeah.
But this was,
they're
tired really
and they're ready to go. And and then like, oh, another guy. And then,
special guest. We don't know who this dude is. Like, I thought it was, you can't just be saying special guest and nobody in the room knows who he is.
I mean, most of comedy is based on hyperbole that you hope that the audience doesn't like fact check, you know?
It
does remind me of one of my favorite like dumb inside comedy things, and I may have said this already on the podcast or told this story, but you know, like a kind of a go-to standard sort of credit that people would use when people don't have actual credits is like they're a favorite of clubs and colleges all across America. Like that very specific language was used in a lot of places. And so there was an open mic for a while in Austin, Texas called Clubs and Colleges All Across America.
That's hilarious.
So that if you did that mic once, then you like legitimately could use that.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's like one of the funniest, like inside, like self-aware meta kind of like things in comedy that I've ever seen.
That's brilliant. I love that so much. That makes me happy. Go ahead. I just did the one show. We went, went to see Clue at the Repertory Theater here.
Mm-hmm.
Claire Wilcher, who used to do stand-up and improv here in Indianapolis, was performing.
Okay.
Did a great job. So that's how I got my my culture in this weekend. And being around the stage, it didn't feel like a wasted a weekend. But I also, like I said last week, I'm in trying to churn out some new shit. So I'm in the writing phase of that. Of not knowing where, like, I just have a bunch of ideas that don't really fit into a set. So it was nice to have the week.
Are they still just ideas, or are they taking on the shape of actual jokes and bits at this point?
We'll see this week. I got a bunch of shows that I'm gonna try them out. I feel like, you know, like you always do. I'm excited in that excited phase to try them out. I do have to figure out how, in which shows I'm going to try out which bits and how they're going to fit. Because this, you know, I have an actual comedy club show tomorrow, or this comes out on Wednesday. I have a show at the Funny Bone that's 30 minutes. I have a headlining set on Thursday that's 45 minutes that I'll probably end up trying all of this stuff within the, like, and just, I think you've talked about this before where you're trying out new stuff, but like you want to do a good job. So give them some hits. Yeah. And I don't have 45 minutes of new material, by the way. It's just like, how do these jokes best fit in with what I am capable of doing? And then I have a mortgage company party where I probably won't try any new stuff. And then I have an after prom, which a lot of this new stuff is, it can probably be related to them. We'll see how it goes. But that damn after prom has been searing in the side of my brain. They want me to do 40 minutes and it's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like a lot of my jokes are either political, racial, sexual, or talk about marriage, like shit that's just so far off the radar of high school students.
Yeah.
So I've like gone back and been like, what was important to me in high school? Like kind of done that thought experiment.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like opened up a bunch of different ideas that I think can last past doing this after prom. We'll see if it's good. I don't really have a space to try a lot of this stuff out. So it's going to be a good test all around this week.
Well, that's really great. And I think you also touch on something I think that is important that we kind of forget about sometimes, which is when we push ourselves out of our normal comfort zones as far as the type of shows that we have, and the fact that you are being cognizant like that you can't do a lot of your standard stuff. So you are using it as a way to embrace writing new material. A lot of times that specifically written material for something becomes evergreen. It becomes something that you can keep in your set. For me, it was like the first time I did a Fringe Festival, you know, like I was trying to write more of a singular narrative, like autobiography, like it was, you know, it's about growing up poor and, you know, but liberal at the same time. And so I wound up writing new bits in there that then just came into the act, not all of it. But there were things like that I was not, that was not the purpose at the time. The purpose of the time was like, oh, I've got to fill 50 minutes and not all of it has to be funny, but I want it to be mostly funny.
Yeah.
And so that opened that door up to me in a way that I otherwise probably would not have, because it was the same thing. I had to go back and re-examine a portion of my life that I hadn't really thought that much about, you know, and because what I had when I was doing that is I had my first hour, which is also kind of about that, but it also jumps around in topics and stuff like that. So I was really trying to fill in the gaps. I was like, okay, I have this joke about when I was this old, and I have a joke about when I'm in high school or whatever, but there's a huge gap of time. And like, what happened in between there? Like, how can I write for this one man show? And so I think this is a beautiful thing. And I look forward to all of your jokes about, I say I'm so old I can't even make a reference. Yeah.
I saw the wheels turning.
Yeah, I almost said Dua Lipa, and I was like, I don't know. Even to high school kids even listen to her even anymore. You know?
I know. Yeah. I don't even know if I can dive I don't have enough time to like dive into the top 10 artists from ages 17 to, I guess it's like 16 to 18.
Yeah. Well, I think that also reads as obvious too when you're doing that. When you've clearly written something that is so completely out of your wheelhouse.
Hello, cool kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Children.
I think that's dope though that you got that coming up and that you're embracing it in this way. So that's very cool. And you do have some shows. I mean, I think you should do the teenager shows at your headlining show at Middle Ground too.
Just throw them in there.
Yeah.
I mean, some of it is, I think, relatable because it's personal. So a lot of that, you know, some of that stuff will be in there. And then, you know, also with a lot of these shows, you don't know what to expect. The Middle Ground headlining set's definitely the set of this week where I feel the most enabled and free to do whatever I want. But I also feel the most pressure to do a good job because it's, you know, it's home court advantage.
Well, it's a room full of your peers, too.
Yeah, you got to. So. So there's also that.
Yeah.
So we'll see what the vibe is. But
well, yeah. Very good. Yeah, cool.
What about you, man? What'd you get into?
I had a bunch of shows over the weekend. I hosted Don't Tell on Thursday night here in Bloomington. We were at the beautiful Backspace Gallery, and Brandi Posey was the headliner on tour from Atlanta, from LA. And we also worked in Greg Behrens, who's out on the road from Atlanta, Georgia, which was cool. And then Bob Nugent and Jetta V rounded out the lineup. It was a good one. My hosting set was okay. They were like a little tight. I had two hosting sets this weekend. I had that one, and then on Sunday at Cardinal Spirits, and both of them very much felt like hosting spots. Like I really was pulling teeth and had to kind of crack them a little bit. And I did better at the Don't Tell, getting them going by the end of my set.
Okay.
With Cardinal, the Cardinal show, I also kind of feel like as the host and representative of Limestone there, because it's a thing that we do in conjunction, which you know that, of course, but Limestone and Cardinal Spirits put together these shows like three times a year as a once a month thing. And so I don't feel like I can ever be super dirty, you know?
Right.
Even though it is all adults and everything, but they were tougher than usual. Like it was really like, and then it also like continued on the rest of that lineup, like did pretty good getting them going. By the second half of the show, they were pretty much all in. But even with that, when you talked to like John Handcuff, who was the headliner, and like Kristen Lucas, who went direct support, both of them were also kind of like, yeah, there were certain things that would just thud.
Yeah.
You know, it was just like you would have to get a laugh and then some things would just not work. And so those were both a little frustrating. The Don't Tell one wasn't as frustrating, but the Cardinal one to end my weekend on was kind of like, man,
damn,
like
it doesn't like, make any sense, because it's like I know these jokes work, and then it's frustrating because you're in the moment and you're like, all right, well, you know, this could be like the fourth or fifth joke or the fourth or fifth minute out of 10,
right,
or 12. Yeah. I don't know how long you did, but it's
I only did about seven, I think 5 to 7 or something on that one. And it was really, I was just I'm just trying to get them going. But also I think there was a sort of thing with Cardinal too, where I had to transition out of all this announcements shit, right? I had to be Matt from Limestone, and, you know, I had to talk about the High Proof Laughs comedy series that we do there, give it up for Cardinal, blah, blah, blah. This is the, you know, Silver Linings Rescue is the charity that we're raising money for today. Give it up for them. They're in the back if you want to get more information about that. Da, da, da. Oh, we're also drawing at the end of this one for the free badges. I mean, I had a lot of just like informational stuff. And then
the audience was just like, oh, it's just the announcements guy.
Right, exactly. And so I think there is a little bit of that mindset where it's like, if someone else does that, which is one of the beautiful things about like the Attic and clubs, a few other clubs that do this, where the MC does not do announcements. The MC goes up and is the first comic.
Yep.
Is because when you're up there reading a bunch of announcements, they just think of you as an announcements person. And then you start doing jokes and they're like, now this guy's trying to be funny.
Who greenlit this? This is the announcements guy and he's doing jokes up here.
Yeah. So it was a little So it was a weird way to end the weekend. But in the middle of those two things, I was at Wiley's in Dayton, Ohio, Friday and Saturday.
Before you move to Wiley's, real quick question on your philosophy, because both of these are your shows. I know you had the freedom to do to read the room in a way that wouldn't hinder future work for you as the MC. What's your philosophy on trying to get them versus, you know, just saying this is as good as it's going to get? Like,
well, I
do
think
you do it always... are you going to throw an extra joke in there? Are you going to, like, you know, you end on a dud
going, to just keep going?
Or just like, you know, I don't know, like a lot of comics will end on a dud and then be like, all right, I need your energy to be better for the next comic. They'll just like transition into something like that.
Yeah.
Or whereas some comics will just be like, I'm going to get them on a joke.
Well, I think that that's a slippery slope, because we both have seen comics who won't get off the stage because they keep waiting for something to work.
Yeah.
And then something does work and then they try one more because they get greedy. You know, and you've also seen that where you've been in the back and you're like, get off now. Like, that was it. That was that was the laugh break. That was the applause break that you're looking for. And then they keep going with another joke or two.
Yeah.
I've always been very cognizant about not being that person. So with Don't Tell, you know, like I got him pretty good. So I felt okay getting off stage, but I also ended with a joke which is about teenage boys using socks to masturbate with, right, is essentially like what the mm-hmm. punchline is, the reveal of it is. And, you know, and it didn't totally hit, right? Yep. And there's more to that joke where then I build it onto this whole other thing. But I was also like, this is, I've got them warmed up enough. There's no reason to kind of go into this much bigger, longer sex joke. And so I was, so I just self-effaced and I just said, you know, most hosts wouldn't end their set with a jizzing into a sock joke. But here we yeah. go, but I'm going to.
Yeah.
And that made them laugh. I mean, it did okay, but then that got a bigger laugh.
Right.
And then I could get, you know, I could bring get up into Jetta, it. You know, bring up the first comic. At Cardinal, it really is like, physically, the space is not great for comedy. Cardinal, the company, Cardinal Experience is amazing. They treat the comics like gold. Like it's like yep. the show, the experience of everything except for actually telling the jokes is amazing because they feed you really well and you drinks and everybody gets spot pay. And it's like, you know, it's dope. But the room is very long and skinny. We finally have got the sound worked out to where you can hear the sound really well all the way in the back of the room. That's mm-hmm. taken a long time to get kind of tweaked out. So that's no longer an obstacle, but it depends on how people are seated. And like this time, like that front part of the room that's right by you was a lot of people. Like there was one person in particular, every single comic commented on that she was real like encouraging, like just smiling and nodding at you, like you can do it, you know, through every single person's sets and their yeah. jokes, but just not laughing. And they were just kind of like, the front part of the room felt way tighter than the back part.
Okay.
Which yeah. when you're performing, that's the only part that you can, in that room, that you can really see and interact with.
Right.
I just kept, you know, that shit eating grin on my face. I think I did call them out at one point. So I did at one point break and go, you guys are going to need to loosen up. This is a comedy show. These are jokes. Pretty much everything you're going to hear up here is a joke tonight.
Right.
Like you guys need to get on board with laughing at jokes. And they all like, and then they went right back to not laughing that much.
Oh yeah.
And so it was, I didn't nail that one. I mean, there's been times I've been able to pull it off and break the crowd. And I think that is important as a host, but you also have to know when it's not going to happen.
Yep.
And so the worst thing you do is just stay up there and drag it out forever.
It is the worst. Know? It's like, yeah, try to land the plane and like set the room for the next comic. Yeah. And then, you know, sooner or later the show has to go on. But yeah, I just wanted to ask your philosophy on that. I know a lot of people that listen are getting into hosting and running their own shows. So that's good insight. But yeah, tell us about Wiley's.
Yeah, so Wiley's was a really fun weekend. It turned out it was very wildly different nights. Friday night, like, I think I texted you too. I think I had like 13 paid or something like that.
Yeah.
And then a handful of comics hanging out. The thing is, though, I was texting you all that before we ever started the show, when we're just looking in the room before it started.
Yeah.
And they were 13 of the best audience members you could possibly have. Like, it was crazy, like, how good they were, how on board they were. I'm real loose at Wiley's. I don't know. I'm just very comfortable in that room. And I realize I need to kind of bring that attitude to the Attic, which is technically my home club. Like, I do so much more crowd work there. Like, even with like the small crowd where it wasn't necessary to do a bunch of crowd work, I wound up doing a lot. I really engaged with a couple of different couples and got into some very fun areas. You know, I've got a bit about doing the Swingers Club in Indy that all the comics are doing now. I've got a bit about the time that I did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that opened up this whole other thing where this woman like kind of like made like an ooh sound or whatever. And I was like, oh, have you been to a Swingers Club? And she's like, no. I was like, would you like to go? And she's like, yes. And she said, yes. And then like her husband is sitting with her. I was like, have you ever told him that? And she's like, no. And I was like, sir, would you like to go to a swingers club with your wife? And he's like, yeah, that would be cool. And so like, there's this weird thing where I helped a couple's marriage, I guess. I don't know. They've been married for like 17 years. And like, it was a weird.
Try something new.
Yeah. It was such a, now whether or not they actually go and do it, I don't know. But it was like, it was just very free and in the moment. And I was able to make it funny. And
they also tag you in the picture outside. They're like, hey, thanks, Matt.
I tell them to let me know, you know, how it goes. But then
some freaks, dude.
Yeah. But then Saturday was like the complete opposite. Saturday we had like, I think like, I don't know, like around 40 for the early show, maybe like 45 mm-hmm. to 50 for the late show. Which in that room with the front curtain drawn is still, it feels pretty good.
Feels good, you know? Yeah.
Like, yeah. And they were wild. They were real rowdy, but in a very good way. Like, it wasn't heckling, it wasn't mm-hmm. mean-spirited, it was just like hooting and hollering, and they wanted to be part of the show.
Yeah,
the early show, I did it like 50 minutes in my headlining spot, and probably realistically I only did maybe 30 minutes of material. Like,
oh, geez.
20 right. minutes of it was crowd work, crowd control, riding the wave of what's going on, riffing off of it. It was great, actually. And then the late show was just as good. I didn't do as much crowd mm-hmm. work, but I still got into it with this woman. Like, there was a bachelorette party right up front, so
of course.
Yeah, but they were being respectful through the whole show, and so I was just like, I engaged them in a very fun, playful way. Like,
yeah,
comics love to be like, oh, bachelorette parties are the worst or whatever, you know, like things like that. And to be honest, like, I've had way more problems with bachelor parties.
Yeah.
Being like shitty and heckling and stuff like that, because you don't see them as often at a comedy club. But
right.
there's like a weird alpha dog thing. Like, they got to be funnier than the dude on stage.
Yep.
Whereas in the bachelorette party, honestly, most of them, if you give them a little bit of attention, like, hey, congratulations on your big night. Blah,
yeah.
Blah, you just, you give them a little morsel. They're good.
Just the acknowledgement goes a long yeah. way.
Now, not always. Sometimes they take over the show or try to, you know.
Oh, I done fucked up now.
Yeah.
I've always wondered, why are there so many bachelorette parties in Dayton, Ohio? Like, I've there has to be, I don't, 75% of the time that I'm there, there's always a bachelorette party. And I hear other comics talk about bachelorette parties. It's Dayton. They're turning up at the Flight Museum?
Yeah, that's
what's
what
going
it is.
On?
Well, I mean, there's an Air Force base there, so maybe a lot of them are military brides. I don't know. Like, you know, who knows? Sure. I think it's also where the club is located. I think a lot of them like to go down in the Oregon district where Wiley's is located at, and they go to the comedy club, and then they go out to all those bars, because there's that whole, like, couple block stretch of, like, some of the craziest bars that you'll go to, you know.
Sure.
Like, back in my, when I, you know, I started working Wiley's when I was still drinking everything, and I went out one time with staff from the club, and we went out drinking, and we went to one of those bars right there on the main drag of Oregon District, and we walk in, and the first thing I see, and it's packed, first thing I see is, like, this skinny white girl chained to the bar.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And I'm like, what is this? And then we find out it is, like, the bartender's girlfriend, and she is so fucked up that he's afraid she's going to wander off. So he literally chained her around the waist, like Black Snake Moan style.
That is just,
yeah,
that is just textbook kidnapping.
Yeah.
Is being held
and she
against
was just
her.
All like, just like, bro, this sucks. You know,
again?
Like, so, yeah. And so that gives you a level of idea of, like, how crazy it can get down there. So I think the bachelorette parties, like, go down there, you know, and hopefully, you know, the bachelorette's getting married, but hopefully, you know, like, the other women in the party are, they're hoping they can find their man to chain them to a bar, you know?
Sure.
That's,
yeah,
they're
looking for their love. They're looking for their future swinger partner.
Yeah.
It's Dayton is wild, man. Like, I talked about it when I had my weekend. It's just like, it's just a rowdy place. Like, Wiley's is a rowdy place, but like you said, it's never malicious.
Right.
It's never like, because
they just came to party and they think that the comedy show is a party.
Yeah. I've never been, like, even talking about political stuff, I've never been, like, heckled on political stuff. It's always like a woo, or like maybe a mild, like, oh, fuck that. But it's never like the audience turning on you.
No.
It's never like I'm fearing for my safety because I talk shit about a political figure. It's just kind of a wild place.
I think it's, I, you know, I do love it for a reason. And there's something about the vibe there that is very interesting. I do want to talk about this too. So we've kind of painted the picture with the Oregon District, which is the neighborhood that Wiley's is in for everybody. In that stretch of bars, there's also some retail and some restaurants, and, like, you know, there's like a Goodwill, strangely. There's like the most I can't remember if I've ever seen a Goodwill that's like in town like that. That's just like, because it's not that big. It's just like a regular storefront Goodwill. It's very odd. But there's also several sex shops right in the mix of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got there early on Saturday because it was record store day. So I went to Omega Music and was like looking through the vinyl and stuff like that. And I was walking around and there were probably a dozen or more different parents with their kids out there taking prom photos. Like, the kids were all dressed up in their prom gear and they were taking prom photos in the Oregon District, which was such an interesting,
that is,
it's like, honey, get one in front of the sex shop.
Yeah.
Let's, Yeah, no, the marquee says, stroke that thing until it sings. That's your prom motto, isn't it? That's like the prom motto, hand jobs only. Let's just do that.
In front of the bustiest mannequin you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
Like, it's absolutely absurd. That's hilarious.
I could not believe that people were taking prom photos on there. It's like, yeah, I guess, like, make sure you're not standing and puke while you're doing it.
Oh, my God. Also, protect the children.
Protect the children.
That's where I need to do my after prom show. Anything goes.
Yeah, bus everybody out there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I had a great time. I had Greg Barron's feature for me since he was going to be up and around in town anyway. So it was cool to hook him up with some spots, and he crushed. He's a crusher from Atlanta. Super fun. Yep. And also shout out to Brady. Brady is a young comic and there in the Dayton scene who came up to me after one of the shows and let me know that he listens to Matt and Dwight Just Might. So Brady, thanks so much for listening to the podcast saying hello. I think that's the first time that's happened. Has that happened to you after a show yet? That's my
it has, but just from people that we know.
Yeah
Not like a guy
does that, not count.
Yeah, that doesn't count. That doesn't count. Connor Delahanty from Indianapolis.
So do we want to jump into the question of the week, and then we can get into where we're going? I mean, you have a lot of cool stuff coming up. You've already talked about a little bit, but I feel like there's more we can get into if you want.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty lengthy question of the week. So
it is, yeah. So as usual, as you noted, like when we had our pre-roll meeting before we started hit the record button, the people that listen to this podcast love to send 7-part questions. And this is no exception. Today's question, we're actually going to break this into a couple of different things. Like Shanda Song, a great comedian from Bloomington, Indiana, who will be recording their first album, I think coming up in July, if I'm not mistaken. It's coming up June or July at the Comedy Attic. She sent in a bunch of questions, so we're going to break them up into this week and next week, and we'll take on the first chunk of them. But before we do that, she did have a note on the end of last episode. Mm-hmm. She wanted to let us know that Yoga Matt is both an object and a person. Thank you, Shanda, for that pun that both of us missed.
Mm-hmm.
I never think about the fact that my name has only got one T, like Matt, and so it was right in front of us the whole time, Dwight.
I know.
We didn't even go for it.
I didn't have my Zen lens on, so thank you for that, Shanda.
Yeah. It's for sending that in, Shanda. We will send you an autographed Jack Johnson CD. Okay. It'll be autographed by us. And
yeah.
this is the new thing that we're going to do, is people that send in questions are going to get an autographed CD from Jack Johnson.
Oh, my God. I hope you stocked up at record store day. You're making big promises.
I feel like there's quite a few in like a clearance bin somewhere I can find. All right. Here is Shanda's question. Part one. This actually has a couple of different parts to it, but we'll start with the main part.
If your question has a semicolon, we love you, but what the hell? I'm sorry.
Well, this is it's more like this is an index question. There is a whole, and there's also a bibliography to this question as well, for all the resources that we'll need to answer it. So,
got a special thanks.
Yeah. Let me read the foreword to the question first. Yeah. The foreword is by Oprah, which is impressive. No.
Good for her.
All right. Here is Shanda's question. What is your take on collaborative writing? As in the pros and cons and differences between feedback mics, playing joke machine, writing roundtables, etc. For those of people that don't know, joke machine is, I first heard Jackie Cation refer to it as joke machine, which mm-hmm. is where you get together with another comic or two, usually like at a coffee shop or at lunch, and you're running your jokes on each other. It's just, you take turns. This is a joke that I have. Any notes? This is just one for one back and forth. Which is, you know, very similar to kind of like a writing round table, I guess. It's very similar to that. And then, of course, we also have in the mix there feedback mics, which is a much more public, large group activity.
Right.
And then collaborative writing, which often is times is also just one-on-one, you know, maybe I've never heard of more than a couple of comics collaborative writing on anyone's set. It's usually comics will have a writing partner.
Yeah.
And then they work on the bits together from the ground up. So it's less of a feedback thing and giving notes and more of like a from the genesis point. So what is your take? Let's start with the genesis point. Like, if you're writing with someone on material, have you ever done that? What are your thoughts on it?
I've tried this. There used to be a group that would get together on Sundays in Indianapolis and before the Sunday show, and they, you know, pitch jokes to each other, advise tags, just like real basic writing group, like you would for like a book club, basically. I don't work that way. I don't enjoy that process of, for some reason, I don't like, I feel ultra vulnerable when I'm not standing on stage and saying it to an audience for the first time. So I found that experience to be like more stressful than helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the second reason I don't do it is because I am selfish. And this goes for when anyone gives me a tag as well. It's like, I didn't think of it. I didn't get there. Therefore, it's not mine. Right. Whether that's, I don't know whether that's like accurate or not. That's just how I feel. So I've always been pretty guarded with my premises and my joke writing. Like, I don't even feel like you and I pitch jokes back and forth because I don't do that. It's like, that's just my writing process. But
we've also spent weeks together in a car and we've never done it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just, for some reason, it sounds silly to say out loud, it stresses me out to test out jokes that way. But I know a ton of comedians that do have writing partners. I know comedians that pay people to punch up their jokes for them. Mm-hmm. It is a process that I think, as long as you're comfortable with it and you find someone that you trust that can kind of not take over your original premise to make it their own. That's what makes it hard for me to like give people tags. It's like my mind goes to, oh, I would have done this with this joke. I would have done this with this premise, versus, you know, I kind of have to call time out and say, you know, this is probably the best tag for you in this moment.
Yeah.
It's just the way my mind works, which is, you know, I write for the Bob and Tom show. That's not at all in my voice. So I do have experience writing for other people. It's just for some reason, specifically stand up, I can't get over the mental hump of working with a partner or working within a group. So my take on it is, personally, I don't enjoy it, but, you know, I get it. I don't think there's any validity to your idea being, or your premise being, less original if you write with a partner. I think that's just your own process, and you have to be able to, you know, do what makes you feel secure in your writing, especially if you're a person. There are people that like to run jokes past me or run jokes past people, and I'm like, shut the fuck up. I'm not the guy. Find somebody else. You got to find the right people to do that. Yeah. You just can't, just because someone's a comic doesn't mean you can run bits by them.
Yeah.
There's a person in Indianapolis that's not a comedian, but comes to a lot of shows and does this not just to me, but to like a lot of different comedians. You'll have a joke and then he'll send like a 7-paragraph thought thesis on like how you can punch up the joke, what he thought of the joke. And I'm like, man, like it could be like useful to some people, but to me, I'm just like, man, I don't even want to do that joke anymore. That's this is where your mind went with it.
Yeah.
Why am I doing this? But yeah, that's my two cents.
Well, I think you and I are very similar in a lot of ways. And I think that the idea of someone sending you like a 7-paragraph notes on a specific joke, I don't know how I would take that. I have had someone after a set one time hand me a piece of paper, and it was literally, they had transcribed my set and like had little notes about which jokes they liked and which they didn't.
Nope.
And like, yeah, I don't need that. Like, this is not a feedback form. Your form as an audience member, I'll get to like writing and stuff for a second, but as an audience member at a comedy show, you have so many other ways to give me feedback. You can laugh, you can not laugh, you can, you know, that's pretty much it, right? Like, you can laugh or not laugh. Those are your options. You can slap your knee. You can get up and do the church dance, like in a
Def comedy jam.
Def comedy jam. style if you want. You can get up and leave. If you don't like the jokes, you can get up and leave, you know. Mm-hmm. But this idea of when people come up to you, which is pretty common, where people come to you and they want to give you a tag or, you know, be funny. I was like, I like that one joke. And I just thought it'd be funny if you said this. I'm with you. I don't want tags.
Yeah.
For the same reason that I like that comedy is a singular activity. And I really learned that I loved that when I did, they do a thing here in Bloomington called the Bloomington Playwrights Project Playoffs, where it's like a 24-hour playwriting challenge thing. It's a fundraiser. And so there are teams of people that get put together. And I was on it 1 year and I wrote a one-act play. And so then gave it to somebody who was the director and then the actors, and they learned it. And then it was performed the next night. So I basically stayed up all night writing it. And then in the morning met with them and gave it to them. We did a read through, and then I went home and went to bed. And then I went to see it that night and I hated it.
Yeah.
I hated the direction of it. I hated the way that lines were interpreted by the actors because, you know, I wrote a funny one act play. I wrote a bunch of jokes right in it. And yeah. I was like, and that's like, that was the thing that really seared it in my brain. It's like, that's what's so beautiful about stand up is like, you are everything. You're the writer, the performer, the director, you're all of it. Right.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, there is room for, you know, growth and open to ideas of people. I have had people give me tags that I wish I would have written that I'm like, oh, fuck, that is such a good thing.
Of course.
But I do fall back into the idea, and I occasionally will give comics tags, you know, I'm a hypocrite about it, you know, like, mm-hmm. but some comics like it, you know, some comics are want to hear this stuff. I strongly believe something I read on Doug Stanhope's blog one time where he said, you should never give another comedian a note on a joke or a tag, or not even a tag, but you should never give another comedian notes on a joke because all you're really saying is, this is how I would have done that joke.
Right.
You're not actually trying to prove it. You're just filtering it through your comedic lens, right? And so in that same sense, like, I don't want to get help from people. You know, I have done Joke Machine before. I've done it with Jackie. I used to do it fairly regularly with Emil Joaquin when he still lived here. Like, he and I would get to copy like once a week, and we would just bounce jokes off each other. And that, it's like more like, is there something here?
Right.
Like, I don't want you to help me write it, but do you think, like, and I did this with Denise too. I'll run a joke past my wife and say, this is what I'm thinking about talking about, and this is how I think I'm going to talk about it. Like, this is the angle I'm going to take on this.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a funny angle? Right. I don't run the entire joke by her. I just like the basic idea of, and the same, I would do the same thing with Emil. Like, if I'm going to talk about, you know, I don't have this joke, but if I'm going to talk about service animals, I think I have a thing that I've not heard yet about service animals. Can I do it? Like, do you think this is funny? Have you heard anybody else have a similar type of thing? Like, so I think there is some value in that, if for no other reason. It also like will force you to write usually.
Right.
If you have like a standing writing partnership weekend, or, you know, like every week you're going to this thing Sundays or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, it will generally cause you to be like, well, I got to have some new material to kind of bounce off these other people.
Right.
Or at least make you go through your rough ideas notebook and be like, okay, maybe that I got to have something to talk about on Sunday whenever we meet. So maybe this is something I can work on a little bit. That to me, I think is all good. As you said, there are comics that do have other comedians that write punch, particularly at the more famous level. You know, we both know comics who have written for comics like Ron White and Jeff Dunham. Once people get to that level, I know that, you know, this is, nobody likes to hear this because he's a hero to a lot of us, but Chris Rock has writers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you get to a certain level, it's just kind of a thing that happens. But as far as like in the non-famous level of it, I don't know a lot of people. Well, I take it back. I do know a couple of comics who actively write together. And the thing with that is I don't think it's a back and forth. I think there's two comics. They're both comedians. One writes their own jokes and the other one writes their own jokes, but then also writes jokes for the other one. So I think the joke writing is just going one direction that way, because I think the second comic is such a much more prolific joke writer and will write in that other comic's voice sometimes.
Right.
You know, this is a better joke for you.
Yep.
But there's also times when you're like, that's their joke. You can tell in the comic set, like, oh, I'm pretty sure so-and-so wrote that one.
Right.
Because just the phrasing is slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
It has like their own signature on it somehow. But, you know, the audience doesn't know anything about that. You know, that's just as like another comic kind of seeing the
nor do they care.
No, of course not. They don't care at all. I mean, most audiences wouldn't give a shit if you got up there and did street jokes if you did them really well. You know, right. Like, they don't care about that. Yeah. I will say that, to come back to another one of hers, Shanda's points with this, is with feedback mics. Feedback mics, to me, I think are bad. I'll just say it. I think having someone that you trust, that you write with, and that you feel like has a similar sensibility can be like productive and good. But when you open up your joke to be critiqued by just a random room full of comics, most of which are probably going to be open micers.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember very early on when I started, there used to be a feedback mic at Morty's, and we would drive up to do the open mic at Morty's, and we get there kind of early. The feedback mic would still be going on. Mm-hmm. And even though I was early on into it, there was one specific time that I remember seeing a comic go up and do a very funny bit. And then the pros, like I did little air quotes for anybody not watching, this was just listening, the quote unquote pros, like the old dogs, the people who'd been there for a long time, basically made their joke the hackiest, blandest. They gave them all these notes to how to turn the joke from a unique perspective into the hackiest,
yeah,
most common, bland, dumb joke.
Yeah.
And so that, pretty early on, I was like, well, this process sucks and this is a bad idea and no one should go through this.
Yeah, of course. So, man, I'm about to say something nice about a place that, well, not a place, but when I did Crackers open mic, Jeremy Essig would sit in the back of the room and take notes. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted, after your set, you could go and sit down with him and he would give you notes. A lot of times it was about like your stage performance, mm-hmm. and less about your jokes. Like, I remember him telling a couple of people, hey, I've heard this premise before, maybe like drop that, or there's something there, add on to it. But at the time, Jeremy was a very, you know, respected comedian in Indianapolis and in the Midwest, to where it's like, okay, I can see the value in at least hearing this.
Right.
This is all about security within yourself. So if you're a type of personality that can take what's useful to you and discard and not take personally, like all the things that people say, or like all the things that are all the tags that people give you, or any type of feedback like that, I think it can work. You can also put these things together. So if you find a writing partner that, you know, all right, this is a person that I'm going to write with, let's set a goal for the bi-weekly Monday mic to have a new 3 minutes for the next like 6 months. And then we're going to hold each other accountable. And then we can give each other feedback if you want it. It doesn't just have to be like, okay, I have to go to a feedback mic and this is the only way to get feedback.
Right.
It's tougher. It's easier said than done to like find a writing partner that you trust. Just because someone's like a good friend doesn't mean that they're going to particularly fit well with your style of comedy or get what you're trying to do in particular. So if you want a writing partner, don't be afraid to resume shop a little bit. Ask people what are your goals for the next, you know, however long a time, what do you want out of this partnership? Like, just be honest with what you want and ask them to do the same. That way you guys can really hold each other accountable versus just, you know, getting together and bouncing jokes off of each other in an unproductive way.
Right.
In my opinion.
Yeah. I think that's all very good. To circle back around to one of the things that you said early on, though, that as we keep talking about this, I keep thinking about my own personal sensibility and taste of it, too. I think I would have a very hard time doing a joke on stage that I did not write. And I think, again, it depends on what type of comic you are. If you're doing a lot of like observational one-liners or whatever, but like you and I both write from such a personal lens, like both of us, like our entire act is like, this is my life. I'm telling you about my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like we might have a joke here and there that's just, haha, see how clever this wordplay was or whatever.
Yeah.
Or just a jokeity joke, but it's very rare. And so for me, I think I always come back to like, this is more about personal expression. And so to do that with another person, maybe this is a growth thing I could try to embrace and experiment and try to write with somebody. But I have the sensibility or the sense of self that I think I would go back to like not liking it and being like, no, I think I just want to do my own thing. Because also like my favorite, this is kind of my favorite part of the whole process really, is like when you come up with an idea and get it to work and click and everything, like I selfishly, like you said, selfishly, mm-hmm. like I want ownership of that. I want that, like that was me. I did that work.
Yeah.
Like, you know, not like, oh, well, that was mostly Jerry. And and I'm just the guy who got up there and said it, you know?
Yeah.
It's that vibe is different for sure.
So that makes sense.
A great question, and people can send in and let us know if they use a writing partner, what their thoughts on it are. Again, you know, at the end of the day, it's like whatever works, whatever you are comfortable with. So you can give it a try, give a feedback mic a try again, even though I don't like them, maybe you'll find value in it. You know, Joke Machine, I think, is always good with someone that you trust, just to make you kind of say it out loud to someone and like, oh, okay, yeah. And they can also find out problems in it too. If you really trust somebody, they can kind of say, yeah, I don't know if that's like a really funny angle, or like it seems a little too convoluted up top, maybe you can simplify it. Like that kind of, those sort of notes I think are very helpful for sure. And then she has one last part on this essay that she wrote to us that we're going to tackle today. We'll get to part two of the Shanda Song Chronicles next week. But she did ask, when is it appropriate to offer a tag or edit to another comic? I have a very strong opinion on this, but do you want to go first or you want me to go?
Mine's very short. Just ask them. Just ask, hey, do you mind if I offer you a tag? Most people will be polite and say no, but like, or say yes.
Yeah.
Most people will be polite and say yes, even if they don't want it, but at least you asked and got verbal consent.
Yes. Consent is important. That's what this podcast is all about.
Verbal consent. Yes.
Well, my take on is a little bit more strict, actually. I think there's a general rule of thumb that I think is accurate, which is you never offer an edit or a tag up. You would only ever do that down or parallel. And what I mean by that is I would never in my life offer a tag to Mark Maron or Maria Bamford.
Right.
It's like they've been doing it so much longer than me. They're at a such much higher level. Unless I became super good friends with them and were very tight. And then maybe. But as far as just comic to comic, do not be offering tags to people that are way deeper into the game than you, that have accomplished a lot more. If you are an open micer, do not offer a tag to the headlining comic that weekend at the club.
Yeah.
Just don't, it's a bad look.
You'll sound silly as hell.
You're going to sound silly as hell and you're going to sound dumb. And it's like, you know, and it's even a little tricky doing it parallel to, you know, if you are at the feature level and the Southern Comics also at a feature level, again, if you know them well, ask like Dwight said, but generally speaking, this is sort of something that rolls downhill, you know, and like, you know, Greg and I offered the MC this weekend at Wiley's, not a tag, but we offered him a fix to one of his jokes. Because when he was doing a set, we both looked at him as like, oh, it was just a simple flipping of like two words. We're like, that's so much punchier and funnier if he just says this. We even asked him like, hey, do you mind if we give you a note on one of your jokes we both had?
Yeah.
And they were like, yeah, that it's kind of, and I'm not just saying that you should do it like this because I did it this weekend from a downward position, you know, but I mean, in general, the general rule of thumb is that you would never, ever offer a tag to someone who's been doing it a lot longer than you. It's just a bad idea. It's a bad look.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. Yeah. I agree. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. I have nothing to add.
All right. Thank you for your question, Shanda. We'll get to part two next week. Anybody, if you want to write us with one of your questions of your own, you know, short, simple questions are also fine. You can send those or you can send your own manifesto to mattanddwight@gmail.com. That is mattanddwight@gmail.com. We will love to read those and get to them on the air sometime. And we will not make fun of you as much as we do, Shanda. We're just doing this because we both know her and love her. And she can take a little razzing. She can take a little razzmatazz.
I got a tag. Shanda, wrap it up.
Hey, speaking of wrapping it up, we need to do that for the podcast. Real quick, Dwight, where are you going to be? I know you have a million shows coming up, but where are you going to be at this weekend?
I'll tell you about some ones that are important to me. I have Columbus, Ohio tonight. That is April 26th at the Funny Bone, 7:30, featuring for the hilarious Jennifer Fulweiler. And back in Indianapolis, April 27th, Thursday, for the Middle Ground Comedy Festival. My show is at 8:45 at Black Circle Brewery. And you guys are not invited to the high school show or the mortgage corporate event, but I'm sure I will tell you all about it next week.
Yeah.
Matt, we
cannot wait. Cannot wait for next week's episode of the podcast. Shanda, we may not get to part two because we might just be deep into the high school mortgage chronicle, like epic tale of Dwight. Coming up this weekend, I will be this weekend I am off. This weekend I'm gonna try and come up to the Middle Ground for a night or two. We'll see if I can make it up there to Indianapolis to catch some shows. And then on Sunday I'm celebrating my father-in-law's 90th birthday.
Fortunato turns
90 on Sunday, so we're going to be throwing it down for him. And then just real quickly, though, next week I do have a show that just came onto my calendar that I've not talked about yet, so I do want to let people know. On May 6th, I'll be at Pacey Apothecary in Seymour, Indiana. Ooh. So if you are out there in the Seymour area, I know you guys don't get a lot of comedy. Come on out on May 6th and see me at Pacey Apothecary. That is hard to say. Pacey Apothecary on May 6th. Bunch of stuff coming up after that, but I'll talk about that on a future episode of the podcast. Dwight, you got any words of wisdom for the people before we let them go?
Thank you for listening. Please come back next week. We will be sitting, waiting, and wishing for you.